Rob Herzog, those of you who were here will recall it was during COVID. We had two streams. In fact, next time you go into Monk's Cowl and Summit next door, you'll see, if you look carefully, that between the two, there's a wall and there are openings, there are doors on the openings. And what happened was, at the time, the authorities, in their great wisdom, said, you're not allowed to go to the beach. You're not allowed to buy cigarettes or alcohol. You weren't allowed to wear slip-slops, but you could only have 50 people in a room, no more than 50 people. I mean, like, brilliance. Why 50 people or 10 people would make any difference on becoming COVID followers or passers on or super spreaders is beyond me. But anyway, so we had a conference here where the doors were taken out between those two. There were 50 people on the one side and 50 people on the other side. And there was a stage that Colin built between the two. And Rob Herzog was walking from the one, talking to the one lot, and then going to the other side and talking to the other lot. It was quite comical when you think back on it. Of course, we had the cameras, so you could actually see everything that was going on. Such a crazy, crazy time. I like to think that was South Africa's coming out speech. I really like to think that. Doing the work that I do, I talk to business a lot, and I gauge sentiment from business a lot. And the timidity at that time was almost palpable. And here this guy got up, billionaire, signed to a family which has been in this country, one of the dominant families in business in this country for so long, and he was laying it all on the line. And he said, "Footsack ANC." Well, that video, 4 years ago, has now been watched by more than 635,000 people. Okay, so how many is that? Go to Ellis Park next time when the Springboks beat the All Blacks, and you'll see that if you take 10 of those, look around you, see how many people. It's almost like you can't conceive that there's so many people in one rugby stadium. But there are 10 of those have watched Mr. Herzog. And I think he energized a whole nation into saying, it's okay to speak up. It's okay to say footsack to these guys who've been robbing us blind for as long as they have. And it's the consequence that the polling says in Johannesburg, the richest city in the country, those guys are going to get 18% in the next election. It's extraordinary. We come from an extraordinary place. But it does show that one person can make a difference. Rob's story is interesting. He comes from the Herzog family, goes back generations, mining, finance, and industry. He's got a long life ahead of him. His dad is turning 100 next week, is it? Basil Herzog, he was a fighter pilot in the RAF, SAF. Okay, but like RAF, SAF. It was a Spitfire though, wasn't it? Don't tell me it was a Lancaster. Spitfire, okay. A Spitfire in the Second World War. And the smart thing that happened when the Herzog and the Mendel family split, no, I'm not going there. But anyway, the Herzog families took the asset that has grown, and the other side, the mining, didn't do as well. Rob went to Harvard where he did an MBA. And he made his own fortune, inter alia, selling the European competitor to NetJets, which is owned by Warren Buffett. Sold it to Warren Buffett. These days, he's better known for saying what he thinks loudly. He's a leading voice for Western Cape autonomy. I don't know if it's independent still. It certainly is very much devolution. He's a frequent critic, that's putting it mildly, of government policy. And as of last year, the founder of his own conservative, not right-wing, conservative media venture, built to give that side of the spectrum a bigger platform. Whatever you make of his politics, Nobody could ever accuse my friend, Mr. Hersov, of being boring. Welcome, Rob. It's lovely to have you back.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, a multi-award-winning, truly independent boutique wealth manager. Invest better with Brenthurst.
Thank you very much. I hate to take any credit for that speech, but it did touch the match and strike a match on something. And I got asked as I walked in by someone saying, I can't believe you don't have any security. And I jokingly said, they think I have security and therefore everyone around me could be security. So they have no idea. I keep them guessing. But the real answer I should have given is there are so many extraordinary people in this country that have stood up or have been standing up and even stood up before I did and calling it out like it is, that the death threats have gone. There are whistleblowers. There are Ian Camerons in government. There are Dean McPhersons. There are Corne Mulders. There's AfriForum, Solidaritate, IRR. There's BizNews. It's a panoply of extraordinary, brave, courageous people doing what they weren't doing, couldn't do 5, 6, 7 years ago. And I was just there at the beginning, and I'm taking credit for something that they are working a lot harder for, and they will have a lot more sustainability. They have thicker skins. They are more courageous. And I want to thank them all and a lot of unnamed people. To those people, I want to thank you for what you're doing and what you continue to do. Now, I shouldn't have gone to any of the speeches today because I had a roller coaster of emotions, which is going to affect my speech. You see, I haven't started reading it yet, which is going to affect my speech. I got so depressed when I listened to Ian Cameron about the incredible work he's doing. But 10 years, he says, 10 years he needs to fix just SAPS. And the rot, the caters, the incompetence, the corruption, the mafia is endemic in South Africa. It's at every single level. It's down to school sports. How do you fix that? You need 1,000 of Ian Camerons. And he said, we should be firing people at will. And then you listen to Dean McPherson, who said, guys, ever you'd ask me why I'm not moving faster. I'm the only guy that changed. I came in as minister. The 5,000 people I inherited are the same 5,000 people that have been doing the same inefficient, corrupt nonsense for 20 years. It's going to take Dean 20 years to fix that department. Or we need 2,000 deans. So I was very depressed after those. Then I went, the mistake of having breakfast with Johnny Copeland, got super powered up, fired up. He says, you know, if you're resilient and you work it out, you can make a lot of money in this country. It's very investable. Then I listened to Whitey Basson. He said, because the ANC has chased away foreign direct investors, there's very little competition. It's much easier to make money. I thought that's probably true. You know, and then I went and listened to Stafford Mazie, my partner. And I got so, every time he speaks, I get more and more excited. I'm backing him on a big project. He is the future of South Africa. I want to make those speeches, not this speech. Right. I better start my speech. What am I? I've run out 3 minutes already. Basically, my wife and a lot of other people are saying, Rob, you don't no longer need to lambaste the ANC and call them for what they are, corrupt, incompetent mafia, because they are dying. Prince Mashele, they're going to be gone by 2029. Franz Kronier's polls, they're as good as dead. They're certainly going to get destroyed in the municipals. They're collapsing under their own malevolence and inefficiency. You don't need to push them any further. But it's the only thing I'm good at in public speaking. You know, it hasn't worked out very well with me on all the other topics, okay? I'm quite good at that one. So is it time for me, with 60 minutes in the game, to be taken off the field with my self-appointed 100 caps and retire? Because is it relevant anymore what I'm saying? There's so many people who are actually doing what I'm saying, making a difference and helping make South Africa somewhat investable. But the question is what I'm supposed to talk about. Is South Africa investable? And I don't want to be that grumpy old guy, and I'm 66 this year. I'm going to live forever. I don't want to be that grumpy old guy that says, the ANC have destroyed everything. It's unfixable. forget it. I'd like to tell it like it is, as Alex asked me to do, but explain how we survive, how we invest, where we invest, and leave some hope on the table. It's a bit hard to do unless you go and listen to Stafford. Christovisa correctly says that every country has problems. We have just different problems. But our country is the most livable, incredible country in the world. I 100% agree with him. I don't want to leave. My New Zealand wife doesn't want to leave. And we don't want to go to New Zealand, which has different problems, because it's deadly boring. I have to start arguments after 5 days just to have fun. And I've been particularly excited by meeting people like Rolf Schultz this morning, who told me about his incredible family, third-generation family business in the Midlands. It's an agribusiness, it's in legal, it's in hotels, and he's doing what BizNews tribe people are doing: investing, building, making money. Or Nick Ferguson, one of my best buddies, building massive new airport in Cape Town. Nick French, another buddy of mine that I'm backing, he's launched the first betting exchange in South Africa, BetMatch, and I'm backing him to do a prediction market. And I'll tell you why a prediction market, and Alec knows this stuff really well, is the way to go. Or so many other people, many of them in the room, building, investing, and making things happen. But then, you know, I follow BizNews, all the podcasts, I read all the articles, I've penned a few, but I also read, and I know we're not supposed to mention competitors, Newsday, because it's very easy to read. It's just a whole bunch of headlines. And the headlines are generally very depressing. I'll just take you 2 days last week. One, a man made R1 million a month selling bread to South African prisons and never owned a bakery. The Eastern Cape gave one company R3.4 billion in travel and accommodation contracts. And here's my favorite. The Defense Department spent R27.8 million on pothole machines, Defense Department, in 2021. By last month, not one pothole had been repaired by them. And I can go on and on and on. You know this. And, you know, with deranged ideologies that the ANC has, there I'm going at it again, BEE, which is theft, EWC, which is theft, you know, I can't say that it's South Africa is broadly investable. And if I was a Martian looking at Earth and I had year 2000, I learned everything about the Earth, and then I looked at 2026, where would I allocate my money? Maybe I'd allocate 1% of my Martian portfolio to Africa. But I wouldn't, if I looked at South Africa in the year 2000 and today, invest a cent in this country, not 1 cent. Do you know we're at the same wealth level per capita today as we were in 2007? We've gone nowhere. And worst of all, this is SARS numbers, so I'm sure it's much higher. SARS told Parliament that the illicit economy in South Africa is 12 to 15% of GDP. So I reckon it's 20%. A fifth of our GDP is gangster and mafia. And it's sophisticated, if you listen to Dean McPherson. That's about a trillion a year in illicit, criminal, and untaxed commerce. And call it what you want. It's thieves, gangsters, tenderpreneurs, political fixers, bleeding the country to death. And we're not growing. We're at 1% economic growth. So take another fifth of that. And corporate South Africa knows this. Corporate South Africa has 1.8 trillion rand sitting in its bank deposits. Money it is not investing. What do they know that we don't know? They know what we know. They're not investing it in this country. Now, they need buffers, cash buffers, but I think 1.8 trillion is a bit much. Over 1,300 businesses were liquidated in the first half of this year. 1,300 companies. And even if Helen Ziller, a BizNews regular, a rock star, a heroine, a lioness, if she wins Johannesburg, which everyone thinks she will, what hope in hell does she have to actually fix it? And if she, like Dean McPherson has done, will make fixes, but they're putting lipstick on a pig. I think the gangsters in Joburg are more hardcore, more entwined into that massive economy than anywhere else, and they fight back. Look at what happened to my buddy Warris Stock. He was gunned down in cold blood on the streets of Johannesburg, and it was a hit. Paid 25,000 rand to kill my buddy Warris on the streets because he was trying to tackle crime and gangsters kidnapping buildings. And when you separate the ANC and their gangsters from their money, you get killed. End of story. South Africa's broken, but it's survivable. It's eminently livable, and it's very, very inexpensive on the Mars Bar Index. But you've got to state-proof yourself. You've got to cut yourself off from Pretoria. If possible, live in an enclave, protected street, gated community. You've got to invest only in businesses that own hard currency, that export, if you could help it, and do not rely on the state. You will be asked for envelopes. You will get awful policies imposed on you, and you will get jerked around forever. And if you want to see the dichotomy of that investing, look at two recent corporate results. We got Valterra Platinum, an exporter, just made a 15 billion rand dividend payout. And on the flip side, ArcelorMittal, a domestic manufacturer, stuck with our rail and energy tariffs, just posted a 1.5 billion rand loss and are deindustrializing. You thrive if you export. We're now the biggest citrus exporter in the world. We just overtook Spain. You suffocate if you rely on the domestic state. And we all pat each other on the back and say, SAFAs are tough. Boer maak 'n plan. When things get tough, we find a way. We knuckle down. But is that really intelligent if we're at the same level of wealth as we were in 2027? What happens to South Africa when decline becomes permanent? And South Africans keep asking themselves, how worse can things get? That's the wrong question. The right question is what happens when decline becomes permanent, when the destructive ANC policies make their final impact? For more than 30 years, we have adapted to failure. When electricity fails, solar generators, policing failed, alarms, guns, private security, municipality fails, Cedarburg first, Mafube first. When water failed, boreholes, roads failed, we filled the potholes. And when corruption was exposed, we developed amnesia, a group amnesia or PTSD. You read some of these corruption articles, but there's so many of them, you actually feel dizzy and move on. And every crisis became another inconvenience. Every failure, another expense. Every expense, another sacrifice. What we call resilience today would have been considered unacceptable 20 years ago. And the danger is not just the collapse of institutions like SAPS. The danger is collapse of expectations. South Africans no longer expect functioning municipalities. We no longer expect reliable electricity. One point here, Eskom's now producing 2 to 3 gigawatts of too much electricity a day. Can you believe that? Okay. Well, that's got its own problems. Unsolved. They can't get any money for it. We no longer expect effective policing. Ian, your job is going to take 10 years. You'd said it. And we no longer expect government accountability. Ian made that very clear. We expect failure now, and then we congratulate ourselves for surviving it. And that is not resilience. That is surrender, described as resilience. And George Orwell once wrote, I love this one, to see what is in front of one's own eyes, one needs to look in front of our eyes, and that's a constant struggle. We've got to look at what's in front of our noses. And the average South African now pays privately for what government was created to provide. I think Davy Ruert, you came up with an amazing statistic that for every rand you pay to the government, you get 3 cents of value. 3 cents out of a rand. Why we pay tax, I don't know. Helen was right. And every year, more responsibility comes down to the citizen, while authority remains with the state. A citizen who spends his income defending himself from decline is not building a future. You are preserving the present and handing the burden to your children. And that is the true danger. So decline is becoming institutionalized, permanent, accepted, and normal. And the question we should ask ourselves is not whether the country is worse. The evidence already proves that. The question is this: at what point does survival stop being resilience and become acceptance? Because once we accept deterioration as normal, which I believe we have, the battle is no longer against crime, corruption, failing infrastructure, or incompetent governance. The battle is against the belief that nothing better is possible. And people vote with their feet. They're leaving. Our tax base is leaving the country. Our brightest young minds are leaving this country. And they're not coming back. And they're not investing in South Africa. And we've reached that point. So before I give you my message of hope, I'm going to time this perfectly. I'm going to give you there are some green shoots, okay? Eskom is behaving better, and that is thanks entirely to Dan Marakana and Mteto Nyati, the CEO and the chairman. They are engineers. They are fixing operations. They are holding back the ANC. They are laying off cadres or cadres. They don't announce it. They have done an extraordinary job. There are extraordinary people doing an extraordinary job in this country. Tourism is strong. The Western Cape is booming. Hard currency exporters can make a fortune if they don't keep all the money overseas. And the Cape Sea route might actually matter more than it has for decades. The strategic element might kick in. But these green shoots are not a harvest. The small islands of functioning things does not make the national platform investable. And basically, these are just evidence of what this great country could be if the state stopped standing on our throats. So my message of hope.
Okay.
I hope that Prince Mashele is correct and the ANC is gone in 2029. I hope the EFF is actually fading away under the weight of its own hatred and that AfriForum, doing such an amazing job, will see Julius Malema in jail. I do hope that Satan comes from the earth and swallows up his cousin Jacob Zuma. I do hope at last that these extraordinary people I've mentioned, like Ian and Dean and others and Mafubi First, can reverse, I don't know how long it'll take, the terrible damage done by Jacob Zuma, Cyril Ramaphosa, and all the people around them, and the ANC. If we can break the ANC's grip on power and soon replace BEE with opportunity based on need and merit, secure property rights, and restore merit and competence, then our geography, agriculture, mineral wealth, and incredible human capital will make this the most investable story on the continent and one of the fastest growing countries in the world for at least the next 5 to 10 years. We have to win the political war first. I wish the political war wasn't on the cards, but we have to, and the municipals will be a big turning point. And that's where Helen comes in. If she can make some fixes in Joburg, if Mafubi First can do so in the Free State, Cedarburg First in the Cape, we can then begin to take control of our own destiny. Now, I'm putting this last bit in because I knew I'd save myself a minute and 43 seconds. And I want to tell you, yes, I am investing in South Africa. I live here. I've got my majority of my portfolio overseas, but I'm finding opportunities that are very investable. I am investing. I bought a very large piece of property on the West Coast. I'm going to development there between Saldanha and Paternoster. I'm backing Stafford Maisie in anything he does. He is extraordinary. Hans Harvickel couldn't believe the speech. He said, I've got to talk to Stafford. It's the most incredible thing I've heard. You need to have been there and you need to watch that, what he's going to tell you about. And I'm also backing a young man called Nick French. He's launched a separate business, a betting exchange business, which I'm helping on, but he's launching a prediction market. Now, we all listen to the incredible polls of of Franz Cronier. And when you remember polls before the MAGA Trump election, anyone who was asked, would you vote for Trump? Usually their wife or husband was listening. They'd say, I'll never vote for him till the day I die. But in reality, a lot of those people did. They just didn't want to say it. So polls, as Gayton said, are for strippers. Okay. Polls, they'll tell you what they want to hear. In general, your Franz Kronier has been correct. But prediction markets are where people put their money. And if you haven't heard of what I'm talking about, don't blame yourself. They've only been around for 2 years. In America, there's Polymarkets and Kalshi. And in South Africa, we haven't come up with a name yet, we will launch a prediction market. And that is where the people who really know what's going to happen are putting their money. And people who put their money on something are the people you trust around the braai. And there is my message of hope. Ons Video, South Africa. Let's make this place work. Thank you.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth. The wealthy aren't leaving South Africa, but their trusts are moving offshore. Invest better with Brenthurst. Start your day a step ahead. BizNews Insider. It delivers the business stories that matter every morning straight to your inbox. Sharp, fast, and free. Subscribe now.